We're ready for our close-up, Mr. DeVille. Grab a dress, avoid lighting yourself on fire, and get ready to probably break several laws as we look at everyone's favorite housekeeper on this all-new episode. Well, she says it way better than I can, so I'll just jump into Welcome to Totally 80s and 90s Recall on this podcast. We'll take a look at everything the memorable decades of the 1980s and 90s had to offer, from music and movies to television and pop culture. If you're new to the show, we're so excited that you found us. We promise you're going to have an awesome time. And for our returning listeners and subscribers, it is always great to have you back. I am one of your hosts, David, joined as always by a man who actually does like hanging out in old lady bars after work. It's my good friend, Rob.
You get a lot of experience.
That's right. They know some tricks.
Yep. Today's episode goes out to all of you macho men out there.
Nice.
Yeah. Every man wants to be a macho man.
Right? Who wouldn't? Oh, yeah.
We all want to have the kind of body always in demand. Right? You're out there jogging in the mornings. You're working out in the health spa. Your muscles are growing. You can best believe Dave and I, well, and Kurt today, that you're a macho man. So how? Here's how you can tell if you're dealing with a macho man. He has a funky walk. His Western shirts and leather always look so boss, right? He's funky with his body. Mm-hmm. People say he's a king. Some might call him Mr. Ego, and he's rocking those chains. Uh-huh. All right, you might like to be the leader, and you never dress grand. If any of these apply to you, you might be a macho man.
Oh.
Yeah. Dave and I think every man ought to be a macho man to live a life of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Great.
Here's what we know about all macho men. You make a stand. You have your own lifestyle and ideals. And you possess the strength of confidence.
Uh-huh.
You can best believe we think you're a macho man and you're in the right place.
Mm. I'll tell you what I know about macho men.
What do you know about
macho men? He gave me the best advice I've ever heard. He said, the cream rises to the top. So, well, great opening, Macho Man, Village People. Not sure.
You know your Village People.
Hey, I don't know. Anyway, Rob already alluded to, also joining us in the studio today, everyone's favorite film critic, who might actually, in fact, we think we previewed it before the show started taping, have diarrhea forever, the Recall Movie Hound. Welcome back, Kurt.
It's worth two.
It's worth two.
I am hound.
I am hound.
I am hound.
Well, guess what then? That means your position as third has been filled.
Ooh. So, yes.
So, well, we are. Are you happy to be back?
I guess. Mean, geez, yeah. I have to spend it a little time with you guys. Once again, my wife kicked me out.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
It's a place of solace. Where we can regroup before we
You get to come hang out with us in an unventilated
space. Room.
It's not great when somebody has bubble guts.
I said we were above those jokes. So nope. It's just So, all right.
Came in with the diarrhea joke.
It's relevant. That's why it was there. And it was relevant not only from the movie, but to you. So it worked in two directions.
Sure.
All right. So,
well, we are 2 days away from Thanksgiving. Turkey, rolls, pies, all of it. So you two, are you looking forward to Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I always look forward to it.
Yeah? Holiday?
I don't know if it's my favorite.
But you're going to the Seahawks game.
I am going to the Seahawks game.
Yeah, playing the 49ers. That's going to be a big one.
It'll be good.
So, who's going? You and?
It'll be me and the missus.
Ooh, missus.
Yeah. Just sending the kids away on Thanksgiving. Yeah,
we don't.
On one of the biggest holidays of the year.
We're right. Sending
no
them
family
with our,
time.
They're going to throw a turkey leg in the kitchen and go, have at it.
We're sending them off with their mother-in-law.
My money's on the youngest one to get the turkey leg.
She'll get the turkey leg for sure. So, all right. Well, Rob, since the team's all in place, we've got our turkey legs where they need to be. Why don't you share with our fans what we're covering for this episode?
Yeah, so today we are looking at the movie Mrs. Doubtfire.
Ooh, nice.
It is its 30-year anniversary.
Beautiful.
Just crazy to think that that movie is 30 years old.
And that means that makes us older.
I don't want to talk about it.
Older.
Just we can just away. Keep going. Older. Keep going.
It makes us older, but wiser.
Well, wiser, yes.
There you go.
More experience.
I knew you were going to go for that. So, well, you at home may be thinking, and maybe even in the studio, my counterparts are thinking, why the heck are we covering Mrs. Doubtfire at this time of the year? Well, in fact, it was released November 24th, 1993, the day before Thanksgiving, in order to clean up at the box office with that holiday weekend crowd going to the movie theaters. And it worked because it went to number one at the box office that weekend with over 20 million the first weekend it was out. Trivia. What was number two that weekend?
Jurassic Park. I don't know.
Good guess.
I'm surprised you wouldn't know this.
It was number one that week, and then you're asking what number two was?
Correct. Yes. You already had a guess. You said Jurassic Park. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So, what's your guess?
I'm trying to think. 1983.
You're the movie hound.
Movie guy. You're going to be impressed, Kurt.
Am I?
It is. Adam's Family Values.
Oh, yes.
At $10 million.
I was very disappointed when you guys bashed that song, by the way.
It's a great song.
Do what they want to do.
Say what they want to say. Live how they want to live. Like how they want to.
Well, I have to be honest. This is a great movie, but as we just heard from Adam's Family Values, despite your love of it, it did not have a lot of competition that weekend at the box office. There was Adam's Family Values, A Perfect World. It was a Kevin Costner crime movie. That sounds bad.
Yeah.
The Three Musketeers, starring Kiefer Sutherland, Chris O'Donnell, and Charlie Sheen.
That had a great Bryan Adams song.
Oh, hooray. And Carlito's Way, which was in the top
five. That's Johnny Depp.
I like, Al Pacino.
I know, but
That's Donnie Brasco.
Donnie Brasco.
You're going the wrong way.
Donnie Brasco.
Look, I like Carlito's Way. It just doesn't scream Thanksgiving family movie to me. I'm just going to go out on a limb there and say that. So, and $20 million is what Mrs. Doubtfire earned. Seems a little low. For contrast, Frozen 2 came out at Thanksgiving and earned $125 million in its opening weekend. So $20 million, but maybe in 93. 20 million was a bigger number.
93 money be in today's money?
I don't know. Do it in your head real fast.
I don't know that.
Not going to make an attempt?
I don't have enough.
No.
I can't.
Nope.
I don't have enough numbers fingers. Are
hard. Well, anyway, so $20 million.
Speaking is hard for me.
$20 million worth of people spent Thanksgiving weekend watching Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah, so it is a
lovely family movie about divorce.
Movie. Yeah, great. Beautiful movie about divorce. Yeah. A lot of good messages in this movie.
Beautiful movie about divorce.
A lot of good messages.
A lot of good information.
I'll be curious to unpack that.
So, well, speaking of the movie, what do you remember? Your first time watching it? Theater, rental, TBS? Where did we find Mrs. Doubtfire?
Man, I don't think this was a theater one. I'm sure we rented. This was a
VHS. I was bored. We did not go to a movie theater. We always waited till it came out on HBO and we watched it for free because of stealing cable.
Perfect.
Yeah, no, this would have been a rental.
A rental.
The Blockbuster.
Yes. And where did you stand on your memories of Mrs. Doubtfire?
I remember Robin Williams.
Well, of course.
I mean, he was everything about that movie.
Yeah.
It was, I just remember thinking, I've always loved this movie. It's like just everything about it. You're like, this is fantastic from the beginning to the end.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite movies since growing up. So,
oh, nice. That was a serious. That was heartfelt. It was very serious.
Yeah, you got me with the divorce. I was waiting, bringing it down.
I know. I was waiting for the. Waiting for the joke.
So
part
right
of
now
that,
in my head, I'm counting down 3, 2, 1.
Where's the
inappropriate
extra part?
Joke?
Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
And then he went straight I love this movie.
It's like great.
You're like watching a Lifetime movie over here. That's what's going on. It's very heartfelt.
The movie hound is getting.
I know he's so sensitive.
Wow.
Yeah, in his old age.
Give me time. So, I'll get back to where I should be.
We're like, folks, we got about another hour of this.
Another hour.
It's going to go downhill quick.
Downhill fast. Because, we're talking about cross-dressing old ladies here. There's plenty of moments for him to.
Brings me back to my college days.
Wunderbar.
Oh, no. Do not promote.
So, okay. Yeah. Well, whether we're damaging parked cars or throwing fruit at innocent people, we'll try to avoid being wicked little monkeys as we head back to San Francisco to visit with Euphigenia Doubtfire. Do look like a lady. Oh, all right, Dieters. Before we dive into our lists, if you want to ensure you never miss an episode of Totally 80s and 90s Recall and haven't already done so, please make sure you hit that subscribe button in the worst way and then share it with a friend. This podcast is the perfect side dish for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. Dave and Principal Invincible over here will get you through all the mandatory family visits with way less alcohol, I promise. So it'll be a lot of fun for you. So with that, let's take a look at the film's important info, which of course is provided to all of us by the Hound himself. Kurt, take it away.
Oh, that's me.
Oh, that is right.
All right. So Mrs. Doubtfire was based on the book Alias Madame Doubtfire by the English author Anne Fine. It was released, like David said, 30 years ago on November 24th, 1993. It was directed by Chris Columbus and had a budget of $25 million. It made a total of $441 million at the box office, so made quite a bit of money. It's the second highest grossing movie of that year behind Jurassic Park. That's why Rob said it earlier. It is.
Yeah, he thinks he's smart.
Sometimes. He's very heady.
I think I'm smart.
You think so.
Mrs. Doubtfire stars the Hillard family, played by Robin Williams, Sally Field, Matthew Lawrence, Lisa Jacob, and Mara Wilson. The movie also includes Mrs. Hillard's new suitor, played by Pierce Brosnan.
007.
That's right.
Ooh.
Mrs. Doubtfire has a Rotten Tomato score of 70 from the critics and an audience score of 77. The critics' consensus on the movie states that on paper, Mrs. Doubtfire might seem excessively broad and sentimental, but Robin Williams shines so brightly in the title role that the end result is difficult to resist.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow.
So, Rob, now that we know all that, get back in the cell and don't make me get the hose. And please tell me what this movie is about.
I'm going to actually read this is what would have been on the VHS tape.
Oh, okay.
So you're
because why do any work for yourself?
No, yeah, okay,
perfect.
No,
perfect. I don't got this kind of
no
time
reason to reinvent the wheel.
I am all about efficiency.
There you go.
So this is what you would have read on the box.
I like it.
It's a Friday night. You're renting a movie.
You're standing in Blockbuster. Like, man,
is this like, the one or do
hoping
I want
there's the know? Video behind the
right? Yeah, and then you're peeking at the adult section. Like, oh no. No? That nobody
was,
else did that?
I think that okay. was you on me.
All right.
I just went back there. I didn't care. I didn't peek.
Curtain swap.
What's behind the curtain?
it's just why is, me.
Why is my dad back here? No.
Pull your pants up, sir.
He said he was looking at the old movies.
Oh, that's where they keep the old movies. Anyway, this is what was on the box.
Movie. All right.
It says, how far would an ordinary father go to spend more time with his children? Daniel Hillard, is no ordinary father. So when he learns his ex-wife Miranda needs a nanny, he applies for the job. With the perfect wig, a little makeup, and a dress for all occasions, he becomes Mrs. Doubtfire, a devoted British nanny who is hired on the spot. Free to be the woman he never knew he could be, woman is in quotes, the disguised Daniel creates a whole new life with his entire family. That's what was on the box. Movie taglines, she will rock your world.
Mm.
And she makes dinner. She does windows. She reads bedtime stories. She's a blessing in disguise.
Ooh.
There you go.
Nice.
He is a master of disguise.
So Reader's Digest version of the box there is Robin Williams' character, Sally Field's character, married. They get divorced shortly after the movie starts. And then they are navigating how to take care of their children.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to spend more time with the children, Robin Williams turns himself into a English housekeeper.
Yes.
And
Euphigenia.
And hilarity ensues.
Hilarity ensues.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, well, as Kurt mentioned, this is a book. I can't believe this was a book.
It was a book.
Did you read it?
No, I don't read.
I thought maybe you had gone to the library and checked it out.
Did you say I don't read? You're like, yeah, I don't read.
I don't read. Sorry.
I'm an audiophile.
The last time I read was the paragraph I just did on my screen. And it won't happen again until I come back.
Don't you teach reading to children? I mean, there's got to be reading in here somewhere in your life.
When you teach reading, you have them read.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You avoid it.
The only way they get better is if they practice.
Well, we go to this... We go to the opening scene, and basically he's a voiceover guy.
Uh-huh.
So he's an actor, but it looks like how he's making his money is doing voiceover stuff.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like the script they've given him.
Mm-hmm.
So Poor Tweety can't smoke.
Poor Tweety can't smoke. Yeah. So he goes off the rails and gets himself fired.
I like that scene when he tries.
Got to do what I got to do.
I know, but I like he looks to the guys in the booth for like
he looks to Kip in the booth.
Yeah. You know, as far as his smoking, and they're all it's just bad. In everyone, a cloud of
the cloud
smoke.
In the
Kip,
studio.
Kip was back there puffing away.
No, Kip was not back there. Kip is nothing if not healthy. All right, so. But I then
Kip's doing a good job.
You go forward.
He came ready to go.
He did.
Rehab's working.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware there was
rehab. Yeah.
Sorry. Small problem. Got it cleared up.
Maybe we should screen our employees better.
Yeah. I don't know if Kip wanted us to know that. I'm sorry.
The whole world's aware now.
He just gave me two middle fingers.
So, yeah. So, he then takes the children home and throws a birthday party for the son. I just want to establish real fast. The son is Matthew Lawrence, of younger brother of Joey. Whoa, Lawrence, right? So, he...
from Blossom, in case you don't know.
Blossom, in case, yeah. Constantly with the... flannel shirt tied around the waist. Uh-huh. Way too much hair. But
it was the early 90s.
I just want to go right on record at the beginning. I hate Matthew Lawrence's hair. I don't know anybody that had that hairdo, but it's just this mop thing on top of his head.
That was like a 90s thing, though. The kid actors, you know?
Yeah, just how it worked.
We went to school. No one in school had that hairdo.
Oh, no, like, I agree.
Sorry, Milwaukee didn't have the same California haircuts as the kid in the movie.
Hey, we were hip and cool. All right. We know what was going on. So. hey, we wore overalls with one side undone. We knew what was happening.
I wore my clothes backwards.
He did once in a while.
Good job. Right.
Well, that's just because I.
That's just because there was
because you dressed in dark. That's just
I didn't know.
No, there was a stain on the other side, so he turned it around so no one would see it. That's all. So.
That's why it was inside out like, sometimes.
Yeah,
I hate doing laundry.
Still does. I was like, that's so cool.
Yeah, but like, I want to establish that hairdo sucks, and I just want to be past that. But one thing I noticed here at this party, he's got the zoo at the house. It's quite extravagant.
Whoever he hired is terrible at keeping the animals together.
Yeah, not doing a good job.
Why is the donkey inside? I don't get it.
It's eating cake. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah, there's but I thought it was
that
interesting.
That horse was a diabetic.
She comes home, and they're all rocking out, dancing to Jump Around, you know, House of Pain. And yeah. They've got, because I had one of those, they've got one of those little portable black radios with the CD player that's on top. Mm-hmm. It's got the two little speakers. This is a handheld thing. It is blaring music across the street. Like the cops, she shows up, you can hear
there was
it
a
out
noise.
In the
they
street.
Had, and the cop says they have
a
noise.
There's a noise ordinance. Yeah. Everything. I've turned those things all the way up. There is no way that was projecting across the street and just driving everybody nuts. But I guess it just, the sound quality coming out of that little portable radio
was impressive.
Was off the charts. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. So
I want to go back. Earlier, well, but he picks him up from school.
Yes, he does.
And they seem shocked that he's
picking him up.
The daughter says, oh, you mean you got fired again?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is a repeated offense. Yeah. Okay. They're aware that dad doesn't work very well, which brings up another couple questions I have at the beginning of this movie. They live in that house. That house is amazing.
Yes.
And in San Francisco, even in 1993, that is a $1 million house.
Well, I just read it in 2016, it sold for $4.6 million.
So, yeah. So that is a $1 million home. Let's just say it's a $750,000 home. It's on a corner. I mean, that thing is prime. And they never show it, but if there's a garage, there's a downstairs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that thing, it's like three levels.
Yeah, they're doing all right.
And it,
they're doing.
But that's
she makes good money.
So here's my question. She's an interior designer. I looked it up. The average interior designer in the 90s made about $58,000 a year. Now, I don't know how far that stretched in the 90s, but he's not making what I would consider probably a decent salary. Even if he's doing that voiceover, what are they paying him for the day? I mean, that's not a ton of money. I'm just impressed they can afford that house. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that house was like inherited or something else happened because just the immense size of that thing and what it would cost in San Francisco, to me, I feel like what Daniel and Miranda are doing is not getting the job done. Well, and look at that wagon he's driving. He's living in a $1 million home. He's driving around that station wagon that looks like it's just dying on him.
So maybe that adds to, I hadn't thought about that, but maybe that adds to the marital stress.
Well, I think there's many things
they're
adding to
above
the marital stress.
They're living above their means.
Well, she's still able to pay $300 a week to somebody to come in later.
A stranger.
Yeah. And is he paying alimony or child support after? Because that you don't hear that.
That was not in the court proceeding. Yeah,
it was not.
Yeah.
It was just you get to see him once a week. So that was it.
In my notes, we got the party.
Party good.
He wasn't supposed to have the party.
He was not
because the kid had not done his homework. He's bad grades.
Yeah, bad grades.
He's a rule breaker.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he was on the table. He's dancing on the table. And I was like, Daniel.
Yeah.
Daniel, come on.
Didn't How was that going to go?
But he's not like a real dad. He's a cool dad.
He's a cool dad.
That's right.
Yeah, I like when Miranda comes in the house the first time. In the background, there is a kid dangling from the chandelier, swinging back and forth.
I don't understand how it didn't come out of the ceiling. Yeah. There's no way that thing supported that kid. They're just trashing the house, and he's just dancing or whatever. Yeah. But, of course, that leads to not lead. That was the final straw that broke the proverbial back. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, 14 years.
14 years.
Down the drain.
Yeah, and so many times in the movie, because he even tells a story, Stu, who we'll talk about in a little while, they knew each other in college.
Yes,
they dated. So her and Miranda went to college, or him and Miranda went to college together. Where do you think she met Daniel? After college? 14 years seems like a long time. Mm-hmm. Or if he was in college, I could see him as a drama major. But then how did he not know who Stu was at all? They never crossed paths? Yeah.
See, I think Stu knew.
Think so?
Oh yeah, I think Stu knew.
Okay,
and because I think if you look at the timeline, so he gets fired.
Yeah,
he picks the kids up.
Yes.
Then it transitions to Miranda at work.
At work,
she gets the phone call that Stu's coming. She's excited. This is prior to the I want a divorce. So this was coming.
Well, this was happening. Yeah, she's already been thinking about it.
She was stoked that Stu was coming.
Yeah, her face when he walks in is not a happily married woman's face.
No. And
I mean, look, Pierce Brosnan's a handsome guy. I would make some of a face too, but maybe not that face.
No, so I think.
Would it be a Teddy Ruxpin's face?
It could have been a Teddy Ruxpin's face.
The divorce was inevitable. Oh. It was coming.
I mean, so, I got that.
Yeah. So. 14 years. It was coming.
All right. Yeah. Well, so you fast forward, they have the first court scene.
Yeah.
And he gets to see him once a week at his apartment.
Yeah.
And then of course she takes out the ad to have the $300 a week thing. I have a question about this too. Look, I love Mrs. Doubtfire. I'll lay that on the line, but I just have a few questions of continuity and things that didn't make a lot of sense. So he changes the phone number for the ad.
Yeah.
There's one phone number in that ad. I saw the ad. I froze it. I looked at it. There's one phone number. Now he's got it coming to his house. So that he makes all the calls, basically, is what happens, right? Or no, he changed the number so he can call and nobody else is getting, no one else is getting getting through.
Yeah.
But he calls multiple times. One time she answers in her car. Okay. It's a cell phone type looking phone.
I was going to say, automatically forwarded to
another time she answers in her office at work because you can see the Golden Gate Bridge in the background and it's a big window. And then a third time she's in her bedroom answering the phone.
Oh.
So this one phone number is magical as heck because it's just linked to every phone she exists with. That doesn't make any sense. How are all these phones together in 1993?
Well,
she's very techie.
She's a high tech. You know, an interior designer. Yeah, maybe she has her numbers forwarded.
Even if you have it forwarded from home to that cell phone, which is a stretch in 93, forwarding it to your business phone would be a whole separate scenario.
Maybe the phone number was going to her office, and so the secretary was transferring it everywhere.
Some of those phones are at night. The secretary's working at 8 o'clock at night when she's
secretary does not get to go home.
This is ridiculous.
All right. You ask the questions, we're coming up with answers.
This is ridiculous.
It's not my fault you don't like it.
So, but then you have that scene. You have the, you know, and I just find this, there's several times in this movie where basically the scene is built to give Robin Williams 5 to 10 minutes to just do whatever he wants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This morning I was watching outtakes of all the different calls he was making as different people. And he did the lady that was in a band like six different times.
Oh, yeah.
And at some points he had like somebody like hitting a machine with a bat. So it sounded like the lady was actually hitting the kid. And it was, I was like, oh my God, these
what
are
was
all
the name
good.
Of that band? It was like something tire,
something, anyway. Tire slash tire damage or
tire damage.
Tire damage.
Something, it was something damage. Yeah.
I have it written down later, but
it's just a lot of these scenes are built. It's a 10-minute scene to just let him cook. Just do whatever you want, and then we'll film it and see what happens.
Yeah, and I read that Chris Columbus, the director, basically gave him free reign.
Just make it.
And they knew, Chris
said, you have to do it like 2 or 3 times the way I wrote it,
and then
we're just going to go. Like I said, I was watching the deleted scenes, and when they were doing the markers, they're like, okay, take number 27.
Yeah.
And he was still going different tries and everything.
But then, okay, so the phone call thing, I think there's some continuity there. Then you have the dress up scene, which I love the dress up scene. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. He gets to do with lots
Uncle
of cool stuff
Jack and
with Uncle,
Uncle Frank and Aunt
Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack. Jack. Hilarious. I love it. But he shows up and he says, you know, make me a woman. And he says he's happy. And then look, Frank and Jack look like they're kind of professional makeup artists slash costume designers or something. So this looks like their job if I look at their apartment. So they're doing movies, TV shows, I assume, something like that. So he says, make me a woman. He comes in there and they go through all these versions of women. He's already had the phone call with Miranda.
My wife said the same thing.
The voice of the old English lady.
But then he did the Cuban lady.
Why would you dress him up like a Cuban lady or the
every night is like the Bay of Pigs.
Like the Bay of Pigs.
Like when he,
every night.
I'm just saying, when he comes in and he goes, this is the voice I'm using. So I need some kind of like older Mary Poppins, Queen Elizabeth type look. And you would think Frank and Jack would be like, oh, we know what that is. And they go to it, but they just go through. But again, I think that's built just to give Robin Williams five minutes to just be funny. But it makes no sense. Cause you'd be like, as soon as he starts putting the, like the wib on for the Cuban lady, I'd be like, you know, I'm doing an English accent here. So maybe this won't work.
Well, and he does the Barbara Streisand and he does the babushka lady.
That's what I said. Not. So what I'm getting at is these guys are professionals. I think if you just tell them real quick, hey, I'm doing an English accent here. I need to be an older English looking lady. You know, Harvey Fire Smith, oh, that's great. I can knock that out right now. Like, I'll do it right this minute.
Well, and then they break the fourth plane or a fourth wall. Fourth wall. And they go, matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match.
Yeah. That's funny, though. I do like that.
That was good harmony. Good job.
Nice job. Did you guys set that up? No, high five and white guys. There we go.
That's right.
So,
white guys.
Another question I had, though. I feel like you said Miranda's a professional.
Yeah.
One of you said she's tech savvy, all these. Yeah. One quick reference check wouldn't have told her Mrs. Doubtfire doesn't exist anywhere in the world. Like
she just couldn't reach the Smythe family.
She met her and just went, you're hired. You're in. Like, no checks. No. These are the people taking care of your children for 3 hours every day.
It was the 90s.
Just a quick check.
We've seen Rob's babysitter. Or we haven't seen her, but we've heard about her.
That's true. Right?
I mean,
so you're right.
Did my parents do a reference check?
I don't know. It was just some girl down the street.
I mean, that's a scary thought. I mean, we were just riding our bikes around all day.
Yeah.
You know, blocks away from the babysitter. And real quick, my parents trusted her.
Look, Robin Williams is a convincing guy, and this is a good costume. He's got a little voice and everything, but can they really not tell it's him? I mean, like, the kids and everybody are right in front of him. A real good tip off is whenever he reads to the daughter, he goes back to those voices that he did as himself.
Yeah.
She wouldn't notice that, like, those are exactly like what my dad does.
No, kids are dumb.
I don't know.
Kids are dumb.
Coming from a teacher.
Until they get to me, and then they're super smart.
Was a lot of stuff I read getting ready for this was the articles and Reddit boards and stuff where people were really kind of hounding on this movie for its anti-woman. You know, they made a lot. I know, right? Eye roll. Insert eye roll.
Insert eye roll.
You know, where they made the character, some of the women in the movie seem bumbling and, you know,
a little bit
unaware of all the things. And,
Because
he's got it so together.
Yeah. He does. 100%.
I have a quote at the very end that I want to share I think really sums it up nicely.
Great. I've also got, he rides the bus to and from where he's working here at the house. So I'm understanding he probably is riding the bus because if they see the station wagon,
they'll know
it's him. But he can't park that a couple blocks away and go drive. And then later he shows him leaving work, walking somewhere to get on a bus. I'm like, you're not even driving to work. It's not like they're following you to work and you're in your regular clothes. So they wouldn't suspect anything. But he's still, and then he goes in a bathroom or whatever and changes, gets on the bus. I just didn't understand the use of his own car here. again, I think it was just a 2 minute cook session where the old guy gets to make comments to him to Robin Williams, and they get to have their little moment.
Yeah.
I like that in a lady. like them Mediterranean looking women.
Well, he was probably there. Yeah. He was probably there in World War II. So he's like, I like that.
Well, you mentioned something at the beginning. He wears the same dress.
I know.
The whole time. Nobody ever questioned. Does she change it up?
There's a couple flower changes, but it's pretty similar.
Well, he does burn the first blouse.
He does burn it.
There's a couple floral changes.
The first day was a blouse and a skirt.
Yeah.
And then there was a flower dress.
Yeah.
There's a couple things. Okay. Right. So
she's not making much money. Leave her alone.
Yeah. So
$300 a week?
$300 a week.
In 93, was that? Is that a lot?
I'm here in San Francisco. $300 a week. So that's 3 hours a day. So what's our math?
And you're getting a place to live. What's living.
Why do you keep going to other people for math? Do it yourself, sir. Right. I'm not your.
I don't do math.
Can't cheat off me in class.
It's $60 a day. So for $60 a day for 3 hours, so that's $20 an hour. She's taking care of three kids, fully cooking meals.
And cleaning the house.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's $20 back then. I'm not sure. I wasn't in the workforce at that time, so I don't know. Well, I did work at Subway, but I got like $7 an hour, so it wasn't the same.
You were a sandwich artist.
I was a sandwich artist. I was good.
Were they even sandwich artists back then?
They were.
Oh.
They were.
It was so long ago.
Look, he got serious. He did.
I did a four-day training course.
Don't question
to get
that.
A certificate saying I was a sandwich artist.
Do you have that up in your bedroom somewhere?
It might be in a box.
Sandwich artist.
Somewhere. Did you ever use that on a resume?
Yes.
And you're like,
yes.
Can you tell us your accomplishments, sir? Well, I was a sandwich artist in 93.
I got my current
certificated sandwich artist. Nationally certified.
Well, I gave that to HR and they're like, well, we have to get this from the original source because you could have made this copy. And I'm like, oh, so I called back to the Milwaukee Subway. Can you send, transcript
and they said sorry our records don't go back that far.
Hung up. I don't know what happened. We're a Jimmy John's now. Yeah. Okay.
We're a Firehouse Subs.
Something else I noticed, he's got some flexible hours at that TV station. I guess he gets to come in because he's
probably
able
comes
to,
in early because he's got a box and ship.
But he gets off work in enough time to get changed, ride the bus, and be home at 3 o'clock for the kids. So I'm not sure what his 8 hour day is. 5 a.m 4 a.m TV station probably 24 hours a day. Are we good with that? So,
well, just watching the movie, he can get in and out of that makeup in 4 or 5 seconds.
I'm impressed at the speed he puts the clothes on.
He got
and everything.
Good. He got it down.
He did.
I was going to say at the restaurant at the end, the lady's just putting on makeup.
Yeah.
Like lipstick, and he's able to get dressed and put the makeup completely back on.
He does it's the Superman in the phone booth.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He just boop, boop. Mm-hmm.
And so that must be part of the agreement with Miranda, is that she cannot be bothered. You know, at during the times that he's at work.
Oh, okay.
Right? You know what I mean? Yeah. Because what if she calls up Mrs. Doubtfire and says, hey, can you watch the kids? I got to run to this. Is there just an agreement that I don't work. I'm sorry. I'm not available.
Those 3 hours. Well, it's not an agreement because when they go to dinner later, she's like, no, you have to come.
Yeah. See? So
there isn't a... Like, it's only that 3 hours.
So it just worked out really well.
3 to 6 or whatever it is. So, by the way, in the first scene when he burns himself and he has to order the dinner, $135 dinner, he gave him $140. That's a $5 tip. That's 5%. That sucks. Even in 93, that's pretty weak.
But that was after they had already put in a $20 rush fee. It was just
too much. So,
well, again, I think that kind of tells you a little bit about Daniel's character.
Yeah.
If you really start to unpack his character.
If you really look at this whole thing, it's quite dysfunctional, right?
Absolutely.
These kids have to be scarred for life at this point, right? The counseling that needs to go into some of this.
Oh, that reminds me. You go back to the party.
Yes.
One of the things that I read as I was just researching and people pointing out things, they have this really intense conversation about divorce. Yeah. The kids are 20 feet away.
Oh, yeah.
They're on the stairs
listening.
They can hear everything. Yep. And so here they hear the two parents and, announced to them that they're, again.
Yeah, she's yelling. I mean, they're scarred for life. These three kids, particularly the littlest one, off in left field. Like, there's no chance. They're going to be normal for a while. No. So, and then dad's dressing up like a lady, and then there's these other things. It's just a whole problem. So, do we think this is illegal?
Which part?
Him dressing up, pretending, and then taking care of the kids every day.
I do think
when they go back to court, I think the judge is a little less concerned about it than he should be.
Well, like he sets up supervised visits now.
I understand
But I think once that happens, I don't know if she can just say, okay, never mind, it's not going to happen now.
Yeah. We need a good bow tie on the end. But what I'm getting at is I just don't think the judge is quite as upset as he should be. Yeah. Because you're kind of on the border of, I don't know what it is, but it seems bad. Like, it seems wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you're spying on them.
Well,
I don't know what it is.
I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. But in one of my categories, when we talk about the least believable or whatever. I have a couple options, so I'm going to steal one from my own list.
Well, I see that.
Is the idea of the legality issue of did he, you know, he falsifying his taxes?
Taxes. Like, where's that extra income going to?
What social security number did he give Miranda?
It's under the table.
I'm assuming this is a cash situation.
So now we're paying her under the table.
Yes.
Which is another issue for Miranda, right? And so, yeah, the legality part of...
No, there's all kinds of things going on.
How she got paid and, you know, who is this woman and did you do a reference check and...
Yeah.
You know, you're...
No. There seems like a lot... They make it all funny, but in real time, it seems like a lot of bad things going on.
Well, and I read a lot of things online where it's a funny movie, but it's a dark comedy. The content is dark. It's not happy.
Well, I saw that they actually cut three different versions of the movie.
Yes, I read
that. They cut a PG, a PG-13, and they cut a rated R version. Mm-hmm. And the rated R version has a lot of Robin Williams stuff in it that you just couldn't. You have to have a rated R.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was going to say, I was watching the behind the scenes things this morning, and it was Chris Columbus. He said there, he even had a version he could probably make be NC-17. Robin Williams goes, it was rough.
It was rough. A lot of cocaine. Yes. But there's little kids on set. And so I don't know exactly how that all broke down.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that he, you know, on top of that, I saw online, I think I showed it to you, someone had cut the trailer,
mm-hmm.
But made it look like a horror movie.
Yeah. And I showed it to my kids last night. It
was spot on. Like, you were like, yeah, I could see that. Because it is a little horrific, actually.
Well, the one scene where Stu comes to the house for the first time and she's up in the window looking down.
Yeah.
It's creepy as heck. She's creepy. And then she flips him off, you know.
There's a lot of problems with him and... See, there's another thing. He's doing a lot of bad things with Stu. All right.
Yeah. My wife.
It's your first instinct that Stu's the bad guy.
Yes. My wife asked me that. She goes, who's going to be your least favorite character? And I was like, I'm not telling you, but it's not Stu.
Guy. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think so.
Is Stu the bad guy? No. I don't think he is either.
Originally, he was supposed to be a bad guy in the first drafts of the script, but they're like, no, we're going to make him into an okay wannabe stepdad type character.
I think Stu just got caught in the middle of some crap.
Well, it's not even that. I think Stu is actually doing okay here, being nice, doing a lot of things. I think Robin Williams is kind of the bad person in this situation with Stu because
he tries to poison him.
He's catching a lot of flack for no reason.
Who orders jambalaya without
no pepper?
With no pepper.
Just hot get jambalaya. Regular noodles.
Just get butter noodles if that's all you want.
Stop
dude.
With this, dude. Yeah. And he's English, lived all over the world, and he's not eating jambalaya with pepper. Come on, man. Yeah, what are we talking about here?
He breaks his car. He breaks the hood off his car.
He throws stuff at him.
Because the thing is, says how much he likes the kids. Yeah, and he does. So I think Stu is guy tried to just goad him into it.
Yeah. Now, he does make an offhanded reference that, well, with the kind of father figure that they have.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing...
I think Daniel deserves that.
Yeah, but I'm also...
That's also what she's told him.
I'm guessing that's Miranda's true. Venting, and that's all he has.
Yeah.
In this whole situation, for all the bad things he does, he's not bad. A bad dad. Mm-hmm. He really does love the kids.
He's a bad husband.
To be around the kids. He's a bad husband.
Yeah.
He's great with the kids, not good with the wife.
Yeah.
Which is why it works out the way it does.
Mm-hmm. And vice versa. I think I question Miranda's mothering, but I think similar. I don't.
Miranda's got a few questions.
I question her whether or not she was a good mom versus a good wife.
I agree.
You know, so same thing.
Well, I've got some fun facts, and you might have them too. So we'll see what we all have. The author originally wanted Warren Beatty as the lead role.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been horrible. So I'm pretty glad. He was 60 when this movie was made. So Robin Williams was 42. That makes a little more sense to me.
I got that they offered it to Tim Allen.
Tim Allen.
Yeah. For Daniel and Stu.
He was the first one.
Yeah.
And again, I'm going to say thank you. Because, you know, that would have been like he's dressed up as Mrs. Doubtfire and he's like, oh, time to do homework. Get the stupid Tim Allen stuff.
So
I got Blake Lively, Robin.
Yeah,
supposed to be the youngest daughter.
She auditioned for that, but what's your movie? She's in.
Oh, she was in Matilda. She was in the remake of Miracle on 34th Street.
No other actors that I had. Yes. There's a long list.
I saw.
Yeah, but Bryan Cranston, Mel Gibson, Harrison Ford. Then I'm skipping
Mel
a bunch.
Gibson and I was going to say,
I
saw a paragraph that's like, everybody Arnold was thought to be in this movie.
First of all, though, it would have been a little awesome It would have been a little awesome for him to be in the dress.
Yeah, how does he do? No.
Yeah.
And then
you was in the Hellfire.
My name.
I'm from England.
She's busting out of her dress.
England. It reminds me of Conan. It's France. I come from France. It's even been like, no, I'm from England.
I'm from England. I came to California.
That is absolutely
Robert De Niro.
None of that makes any sense.
That, like, I don't, and I didn't fact check that, so I don't know if it's true, but.
Also, back to Stu, do you think the first time.
Tom Cruise? No.
The first time when he talks to Mrs. Doubtfire and he's like, what part of England are you from? Your accent's a little muddled.
It's a little muddled.
Kind of like your tan.
Kind of like your tan, dear.
But he knows this is off. Something's up. Immediately, right? Like, he's a little on edge after that.
Because I do think, I personally think Stu knows.
He knows something.
I think he knows that this is not, because at the pool, he really is encouraging Mrs. Doubtfire to put on a swimsuit.
He just wanted to see her in a swimsuit.
He's really pushing for the swimsuit.
He likes the elderly.
And I think it's because he knows.
We all wanted to see
Mrs. Doubtfire in a swimsuit.
It's like the rising of the Titanic.
Yeah. You know, when he tells the girl in the
bikini. I think they outlawed whaling.
When he tells, when he tells the girl that the drink is on him.
Oh, yeah.
Does he just forget he's dressed up or and he smiles at her? Like,
well, he's got a bit of a drinking problem because I think he gets a few of those drinks in him and then he forgets. That's what happens at the restaurant.
That is what happens.
He had too many.
Trying to catch up with the double scotch.
That's true.
He drank like five double scotches in 2 seconds.
Bully. He's just putting them down.
Yeah. Well, his boss is a bit of a drinker too. Yeah. So.
A bit of a horn dog as well.
I've got Harvey.
Yeah, nobody stops to go. He just suggested a foursome in the limo.
I kind of.
Yeah.
Hey, all right.
You know what? I'm on board.
I'm on board. other actors considered for Stu.
Nice.
Hugh Grant and Sting.
Hugh Grant would have been funny.
Yeah.
Sting would have been interesting.
And I read that Hugh Grant was already committed to.
9 months.
Four
weddings and a funeral. Gotcha.
Yeah. But they had worked together and they wanted to.
I've got Harvey Fierstein asked. To be Robin Williams for the part.
Because he had heard Robin Williams'
impression of him. Yeah. And he loved his impression of him, so he asked if he wanted to be in a movie with him.
Yeah.
So he called and he said, do you got anything in this? And then Uncle Frank popped up. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
of course.
Took Williams 4 hours to get into hair and makeup.
I read that.
And costume every day.
He did it at his house because he was the shooting the movie just down the street. So he set up a makeup room in his basement.
That's cool.
At like 3 o'clock in the morning.
I've got that the mask dripping was improvised.
Yeah.
The movie lights melted the frosting and it was in the script and they actually weren't sure what they were going to do. And then he just kind of riffed on
cappuccino
it.
Cappuccino or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, would you like one number two, dear?
Dear.
Mrs. Doubtfire was nominated for best makeup at the Academy Awards and actually won.
It won. It
won an Academy Award.
That's awesome. Also won Golden Globes.
Yeah.
And he won Golden Globe for best actor.
That's it. Well, it's because in the Golden Globes, they have those two categories.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Comedy and musical.
I don't think he was nominated at the actual Academy Awards though. Mm.
Oh, no, true.
Yes.
What did I
have? I got that Mrs. Doubtfire says the word deer a total of 101 times.
Oh, wow. I like it.
Nice job.
That's good. That's a commitment.
I had to sit there and count with the little tallies.
Yeah, you had tallies. And then when the wife walked in the room, you're like, damn it. You'd start the movie over.
That's right. It's like, I lost count. Why weren't you writing it down? I was doing it in my head.
I saw it was a drive-by fruiting. That would have been great. You realize, though, if Arnold was the one that hit him with the lime, his head would have exploded. I'm sorry. Too hard.
Too hard.
I'm sorry. Too hard. I saw that both Robin Williams... Robin Williams drew on his real life divorce.
Oh, nice.
For the dramatic scenes.
Nice. Yeah.
And
good times.
And at the time of the film, filming, Sally Field was going through a divorce as well.
Oh.
So it was a thing.
It was perfect.
It was a thing.
So I got a question. In 1993, would that children's show at the end with her and the puppet monkey, is that working? Is that going nationwide, being syndicated everywhere? I don't know. There's Blue's Clues and those things have survived, right?
Maybe.
I don't know if it would have been acceptable then for a guy to be dressing up on TV for children. I don't know if that would have played well back then.
I'm not sure. I'm just wondering because he says at the end, they want to syndicate us in Detroit, New York, LA, Hollywood.
Hollywood.
He does the whole thing. I just wonder would there have been really that much call for that show? Like stations were calling, like, we have to have that.
Everybody wanted to see the Wicked Monkey.
That's right.
The Wicked Monkey.
Kovacs.
Kovacs.
Wicked, wicked monkey.
No, monkey bite.
You're from England? That sounds gross.
Yeah. That sounds gross.
So, yeah, I'm just wondering. I just wonder if that show is successful because he's basically on star. He's on a rise of stardom at this point. So he's the new Mr. Rogers. I'm not sure. So.
I guess. I mean, she's likable. I mean, she's got all the things that a TV studio would want, I guess.
But yeah.
Entertaining. She's likable.
She makes a mean cup of cocoa.
That's right.
Yo, yo.
I saw that in the UK, children under 12 were not allowed to see it.
That's right.
Why?
It was
because of the
subject matter.
The sex toy like a jackhammer.
Sex toy like a jackhammer. Yes.
That's the line that
that's the did line it. That did it in. Really? And they wouldn't take it out for the UK release. So they said anyone under 12 couldn't see it. So what did they say? It's like Mount Vesuvius every night or something.
It's like a horror movie when the lights dim. The lights something like dim. That.
It's like a prison movie.
Yeah. Every time.
Surprise she hasn't cracked a tooth or something like that.
It's so descriptive. What do we think's going on with this thing?
I don't know.
So, all right. Well, you guys got any other fun facts or like information about the movie before we jump into the categories?
I had one little thing. It's the Chris Columbus had to shoot each scene with like three or four different cameras.
Oh, nice.
Just because of all the ad-libs that he would do, he wanted to get every actor's initial reaction so it wasn't fake. It didn't look fake.
Oh, yeah.
Like good. The dropping the teeth in the glass and it automatically shoots to the youngest daughter just cracking up.
Make them pinta. Make them
pinta. Oh, carpe dentum.
Carpe dentum.
The way he says pinchers.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Make them pinches.
All right. Well, we packed the cans. Now we have to do what?
Ship them.
The cans. So that's right, smartasses. Let's head to the categories.
Hey, here come our categories. Our recall movie categories.
Whenever I hear that song, I feel way underdressed. I should have like a leisure suit on or some sort of old tuxedo.
Yes,
like
that, something with that a butterfly
tuxedo
collar.
That you have. Yeah, yes, I should be wearing something along that line.
Yellow ruffled shirt.
I just feel underdressed. So, jumping into category one, we love this one. It's our favorite one to start with. Favorite quote / dialogue. We added that on our last movie to give Rob more. We know he doesn't get to talk enough, so we give him more space to stretch this thing out. And since he probably will do that, we'll start with him so we can get it out of the way.
Ooh, okay.
Wow. So, Rob, you start us. Category one, what do you got?
Favorite quote.
Yes.
We kind of just talked about it, but it's at the restaurant. Mrs. Doubtfire, the family has left the table. It's just Mrs. Doubtfire and Stu at the table. She starts to insinuate that Stu is looking to get to a little physical. She says, sink the sub, hide the weasel, park the porpoise, a bit of the old Humpty Dumpty. Little Jack Horny, the horizontal mambo, the bone dancer, rumble foreskin, the baloney bop, a bit of the old cunnilinguistics.
There's so much.
Stu says, Mrs. Duffer, please. Mrs. Duffer says, oh, I'm sorry. Am I being a little graphic? I'm sorry. Well, I hope you're up for a little competition. And he says, excuse me? She's got a power tool in the bedroom, dear. It's her own personal jackhammer. She could break sidewalks with that thing. She uses it and the lights dim. It's like a prison movie. Amazed she hasn't chipped her teeth. And then she adds to it and says, I hope you brought the cocktail sauce. And he says, excuse me? And she says, she's got the crabs, dear, and I don't mean Dungeness.
That's really bad.
It's good.
Oh, man.
That was one of the tops of my list.
Oh, man.
I remember you saying the old cunnilinguistics.
Oh, yes.
Like that's cunnilinguistics.
Yes. That's Saturday Night Live
It's
sketch.
A common term I say a lot. Often.
Have you seen
She's got the crabs, dear, and I don't mean Dungeness.
Have you seen that Saturday Night Live sketch? It's with Christopher Walken. It's during Civil War. And they're like, there's these girls on the porch, and they're like, oh, Colonel Angus is coming to visit us today.
Colonel Angus. Goes,
I love Colonel Angus. So they're like, Colonel Angus, you want to stay over? He's like... all right, Kurt, favorite quote.
All right, mine's right after the son catches Daniel urinating in the Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh.
And he comes running in right after he says, shut or watch your mouth, young man. Yeah. And he goes, you don't really like wearing that stuff, do you, Dad? And Daniel, as Mrs. Doubtfire, says, well, Some of it's comfortable. No, it's a pain in the padded ass. This is not a way of life. It's just a job. I don't go to old lady bars or anything like that after work. You know, it's just the only way I can see you guys every day.
That's right.
Who did? And then the daughter comes in. Who did this? Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack.
Yeah. Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack.
I think he adds, just a couple minutes later, he adds that, you know, I didn't have surgery or anything. Or yeah, something I didn't like have that. Surgery or
anything. Well, there was some, that scene right there, though, has, in 2023, has drawn a little backlash for being transphobic.
He's a she's a he.
The kid says, call the police and stuff like that. Yeah. So unfortunately, that's drawn a little ire. Now in 93, I guess he's a little surprised.
Kick him in the balls.
Call the police.
He's got balls? He's got everything.
I mean, I guess you put him in that position. Yeah. Older lady, you're 15, 14 year old, 13, whatever he turned on
12.
That birthday.
It was 12. His 12th
he was 12?
Yeah.
He seemed older than 12.
It was the hair.
I had questions about how Mrs. I don't know. Maybe you guys. He pees to the side?
Yeah.
Like he wasn't straight on the tub. He was like peeing.
First of all, two problems. Why is the door unlocked?
Good call.
Two, just sit down. Just a lot more relaxing anyway.
There's less splashback.
As I've gotten older, I'm much more apt to just, let's just sit down. What are we doing here? I don't need to prove anything to anyone. I don't need to hover. I can just sit and I can enjoy my time.
I can enjoy my time. This is me time. I'm enjoying it.
That's right. You know? So I look, just take a seat. It's not that big a deal. You've been on your feet all day. So. That's right. All right. Well, those are good. Those are both really good. Mine comes from the scene where with Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack, where he makes him a woman. And so you kind of alluded to it earlier, but I like Harvey Firestein a lot. Mm-hmm. Outside of Robin Williams, he's probably my second favorite character, but I've got, he goes, I think we're going to need to go older. He goes, older? You mean like Shelley Winters older or Shirley MacLaine older?
And what's the difference?
Frank, he says, what's the difference? He goes, some scotch tape and red hair dye. She goes, he goes, what about Joan Collins? Oh, I don't think I have the strength, but I do have some spackle.
I do have plaster.
Oh, plaster. That's plaster. What he said. Oh, that was earlier when he says, we're not going to use, he said, not use something. He goes, we'll just lightly spackle.
Yeah.
So that's good. I Harvey Firestein's funny in this. Mm-hmm. I like when he's on the phone earlier and he's like,
no, ma.
She says, yeah.
He goes, talking to the dog.
Says, she says, bitch. Your ma says you can stay with her if you want to. He'll think about it. He's got some really good, he's only got 5 minutes in the movie and he throws a lot of weight around.
I was going to say, the one from him I like is when Daniel first shows up, he goes, could you make me a woman?
Honey, I'm so happy.
And Daniel goes, I knew you'd understand.
So a couple others I saw, I really liked. When she first comes to his apartment.
That's my next one.
Yeah. Bad. And he's like, you know, I'm doing this displaced thing. He goes, but look at you, this lovely Dances with Wolves motif.
Which they had to get okay through legal before they could put that in the movie. Yeah,
so
he says, thank you, Miranda. I was going for the for a refugee motif. You know, that fleeing my homeland kind of thing. but look at you, this lovely Dances with Wolves motif. I love the motif. What's your Indian name? Shops with a fist? Shops with a fist.
I got Chris saying, geez, you're big for a lady. You could play for the 49ers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was a fullback, dude.
The thing where he says, do you think the kids should leave the room before you bash their father? Well, if I did that, I may never see
him again.
So
I went with the bus driver. I liked the Mediterranean look in a woman, natural, healthy, just like the way God made you.
Yep.
Well, he broke the mold when he made me. He made me very special. And the bus driver, he sure did.
He sure did. I like when he's talking to the boss for the first time and Tony comes in and goes, hey, those got to get on the truck by 6 o'clock. And he goes, Tony, this is Mr. Lundy. And he walks off and Mr. Lundy goes, he knows who I am. I just thought it was funny, the delivery of that. So
I like when he's meeting with the boss, when he's telling him what to do.
Yeah.
Wow. Films. Will I be introducing these movies on air? Not exactly. Well, what do I do? Well, you take all these cans, you box them, you ship them. Then you box those cans over there, you ship them. Then more will come in. You box those, you ship them. Any questions?
After
you box them? You ship them. Lots of luck, smartass.
I think I made a friend.
I like the one where she comes later and his house is nice. Mm-hmm. He says, I cook, I bake, I sew. Thanks to this Amish home study course, I'm doing quite well. That was pretty funny.
Also, the first time she was, she comes over to his apartment. She tells him that she's putting an ad out for a nanny.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, a newspaper? Are you taking one of those personal ads? DWF? 6 WWM with BMW into light B&D.
B&D. Or when she asks her opinion on the dresses, She says, and she tells her where the frock
is. Put the frock away.
Yeah.
You want to be Kilimanjaro on the first date, dear. Inaccessible.
Inaccessible. Yes.
I like this one. I think it's funny. I don't think it was meant to be off color, but it just sounds bad. She goes, please don't. No, it's bingo night, dear. She goes, cancel it. I can't. It's my turn to pull the balls at the rotary.
At the rectory.
The rectory. Oh, so
I like when
severe tire damage.
I like when she's picking him up the first time, and the littlest daughter goes, "We're his damn kids. They're goddamn kids too."
Or when she says she smells like formaldehyde.
Yeah.
She goes, "That's what keeps Granny preserved."
Well, and then he goes, "Thanks for the time, Warden."
Warden. Yeah. So, and then of course we're missing we got the hello at the beginning. Hello
is probably on the way, dear.
That's the one right there. Help is on the way, dear. And she goes running across.
My first time as a woman, I've already got hot flashes. When I was watching the deleted scenes, the hot flashes part, he had a couple of other good ones. He goes, "Oh my, first day and I burnt my fun bags." Another one was, "I should change my name to Mrs. Catchfire."
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, so, well, we could probably do quotes all day long.
Stew, that's more more like more a thick stew than a name.
That's disgusting. That's the most revolting thing I've ever seen.
Well, and then really subtle, she goes, "Diarrhea it's short forever. For Stuart." And he goes, "Is it?"
She goes, "Why would you want mom to have diarrhea forever?"
What's amoebic dysentery?
So, all right. Well, that jumps us to category two. We'll start with Kurt on this one. Favorite main character.
I went easy. I went Mrs. Doubtfire. So, not Daniel, but Mrs. Doubtfire.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I went Robin Williams in general.
I did too.
I don't know if there's another answer to this.
I was thinking the same thing.
As soon as I saw this, I was like, what is David trying to get at? This one's too easy.
Yeah, but everyone else.
I tried to go Rob. There's no choice.
No Barbara Hummel.
Everyone else here's job is to support him.
Yeah.
Feed him. So he can just squeeze the juice off of it.
Yeah.
So, because it's 10, 15 minute moments of him getting to riff and everybody else kind of joining in as they can. So, yeah, it was, there's no other main character you can really go to. So,
yeah.
What are you going to do?
I picked him because I think just from an actor perspective, just the appreciation for what he did, I think to improvise. I don't know that there's anybody that in our lifetime, as far as actors go, that is as good of an improv, that just in the moment,
yeah,
coming up with stuff, just riffing.
Eddie Murphy is really good.
I mean, he's good. He's just really good.
Eddie Professor, you know? Right? Eddie Murphy's pretty good.
I've also seen Eddie Professor too.
Ooh, isn't that the clumps?
It's not as good.
So that's why I picked him. I just think this movie really, like you said, is a vehicle for Robin. It's a Robin Williams vehicle.
You just get to run around.
But you get to see how good he was, I think. You know, unfortunately, he was a very troubled guy, you know. But I just think there's no movie without him.
Well, yeah, and no. And all those other choices of Warren Beatty, none of that would have made
no
way. Yeah, that would have been horrible.
They would have been terrible movies. They would have made zero sense. So. All right. Well, then that's easy. Category three, favorite scene or event. Rob, start us off.
All right. You're going to
give me
shit for this one.
Yay.
I was wanting to hear this because you said that earlier. So
yes. Intrigued. I wanted to go with kind of an obvious one. And I initially was going to pick the whole Bridges restaurant scene I enjoy. But for me, I think the pivotal moment, favorite scene.
Oh.
Drive-by fruiting.
Oh, okay.
It was a drive-by fruiting. I was getting ahead of myself.
Heck were you going with that situation?
I was going to go with my favorite location.
That's coming up soon.
Drive-by fruiting. I read that, I'm going to read most of this in its entirety. It says, it turns out Williams' run by fruiting line was completely improvised.
Of course.
Rosin 69 shared details about his time working with the late actor on the film as he recalled filming opposite him. In the scene, Williams chucks a lime at Brosnan's head after his character calls Daniel Hillard a loser. Daniel, as Mrs. Doubtfire, blames the flying fruit on a vexed kitchen employee. Oh, sir, I saw it. Some angry member of the kitchen staff. Did you not tip them? Oh, on the terrace, they ran them that way. It was a run by fruiting. I'll get them, sir. Don't worry, he says. Run by fruiting. It wasn't in the script. Brosnan told GQ, I get the beers. I'm walking back and thinking this is going to take forever to hit me in the head. The first one missed, and the second one is history. So he got it on its second, toss. And another tidbit from the film and a testament to method acting, the Die Another Day star said he didn't see Williams out of his Mrs. Doubtfire costume until filming wrapped. I remember going up to San Francisco the first day. I went to the makeup trailer, and Robin Williams was in there in a Hawaiian shirt, big hairy arms, cargo shorts with hairy legs, but he had the head of Mrs. Doubtfire. Williams eventually reverted to his true self and introduced himself to Brosnan out of character. I went to work every day on that movie, and I was always working with Mrs. Doubtfire. It wasn't until the end of the movie that I met Robin.
I read a thing that Robin Williams would go off set as Mrs. Doubtfire, and he would just run errands in San Francisco, and nobody knew it was him. Like, they just thought he was an older English lady.
But did you read where he went to the sex shop and bought a whole bunch of sex toys as Mrs. Doubtfire?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and the drive-by freedom part, one of the things I like is that it's super fast, but when the camera pans back to him really quick, he's kind of laughing. Like he's going, he's
trying to look around.
And then he has to pull it together really quick. And I just.
So, all right. Well, my favorite scene is the one with Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack. So when they turn him into Mrs. Doubtfire.
That was mine as well.
Again, I question why we're going through these other costumes because, again, we've established this is going to be an English old lady. So the Cuban lady and the others don't make a lot of sense. But it's just, again, it's 10 minutes to let Robin cook and then do impressions and have a good time. It's kind of like an Aladdin thing. Mm-hmm. But everyone's funny here. In fact, I'd say Harvey Fierstein is holding his own here with Robin Williams because he's making a lot of good comments comments about the scotch tape and red hair dye, the spackle, the I don't have the strength. Mm-hmm.
Any closer and you'd be ma.
You'd be ma. Yeah, that's great.
You get the impression that he's playing himself.
Yeah. I know.
You know what I mean?
Well, Harvey Fierstein is just being him. Harvey Fierstein is the exact same person in every movie. There is no range, but he gets those little bit parts and it's perfect. Yeah. But my favorite part of that whole thing, the impressions are funny. Everything's good. The matchmaker's good. The high five and the hip thrusts at the end where Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack can't have the rhythm to high five or slap each other right, but they're doing it. Yeah. It's really funny. So it's funny. They just look on that. So. I just think it's funny. He goes, I don't think I have the strength.
But I do have some plaster.
It's just his, and he's in San Francisco, but he's got this thick, like, New York accent.
Yeah.
Scotch tape and red hair dye. So, all right, Kurt, you and I tied.
We
did. We don't have to, you got any more on that scene?
I do not. I just,
emergency?
Doodling over here.
Someone's phone. I think it's my phone.
It is your phone.
It's in my bag off set. We apologize.
We got to get Kip on that.
We're supposed to have phones outside the studio, and I have severely violated that rule of leaving my phone on. It's like 2023. I don't know how the silencer apparently works
you're
on
like,
my phone.
You were like the Mrs. Doubtfire, the old woman that's like a meeting that can't turn off
her
phone.
Absolutely ridiculous. I give Rob crap for breaking rules all the time. I can't even turn my phone off. So
he's becoming more human every day, folks.
You know what, folks? Right. It's a little extra music added to the ambiance of the show. So enjoy.
Perfect.
You know, not everyone has that iPhone ringer. I've specialized that, so that's good for everybody.
This is where, if I would have done that, this is where David would have said, "You're not cutting that. Leave that in.
Leave it in.
No, it all stays in.
Now he's like, let's start over.
It all stays in.
We never start over. So
you better not text me a few days from now going, hey, can you cut that out?
By the way, I just want to, branch out here real quick and say, when I asked Kurt, hey, you have anything else since we already covered and had the same thing?
I see what he did there.
And we just moved on, and that's what happened.
So you're deflecting. You're deflecting from the fact that your phone rang.
That my phone did ring. So, well, it stopped ringing, so we can get back on track.
I'm sure it'll go off again.
All right. I am going to
I want you to answer it next time, and we're going to
on camera.
Yeah.
That's not working. All right. So we're going to the category. We're going to start with Kurt because I'm almost assured I know the answer.
You probably do.
But category four is our favorite impression in the movie. So, Kurt, lead us off with what I know you're going to say.
David knows what I'm going to say. I use this one in class all the time. I do a great impression of a hot dog.
Ah, dang it.
Is that yours,
too? That's what I did. That time, Daniel does an impression of a hot dog in front of a court official.
So I will say, I have done this before in class, and I have kids like 5 years later. Hey, can you still do the impression of a hot dog?
Yes.
And I do it.
So real quick, do you have... like a historical hot dog paragraph, like where hot dogs came from or how they're, you don't have anything else?
I promise.
Okay.
No.
No.
So, I got nothing. Well, if anyone was going to have extra hot dog information.
Yeah. But I definitely know that I am not a bratzy.
You're not a bratzy at all.
Nobody knows what that means.
Wunderbar.
Little side note, David and I watched a great movie yesterday called Yoga Hosers.
Yoga Hosers.
Check it out.
It's on, it's streaming on Amazon or Peacock.
I feel like have those. This is where we need to put a disclaimer that goes
fantastically
the
bad.
The thoughts and comments.
It's a Kevin Smith
in this
movie.
Show,
it's got to be good.
Do not reflect the
what? It's our show. It reflects us 100%.
It's coming from the movie. How did you know it's good?
Yeah. There's no corporation representing us. It's just you and I. So
we're brought to you by Arnold's Chicken and Rice.
Chicken and Rice.
We're here to duck you up.
Cage-free organic chicken from California.
California. So,
my favorite impression is. The Barbara Streisand. Although I said they should have never, they should have never dressed her up like that because it didn't go with this character. But really funny, and it's a little eerie how much he actually looks like Barbara Streisand.
Well, and
like,
it's
pretty dead on.
I had read that he didn't know the lyrics to that. That
that's just
Harvey had to teach him the lyrics because he didn't know.
Stereotypical that Harvey would just know all the show tunes, right? Oh, what do you need to know, Robin? I'll tell you right now.
I know the Barbara.
The Barbara's my friend.
So some other ones he had on there. You could have been the alien. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
I'd do that bull and get to know you. Humphrey Bogart. Bernier. The abusive member of a band called Severe Tire Damage. The foreign she-male.
That was an interesting one.
I don't work with the man because I used to be one. Yeah. I don't know if that plays well now.
Yeah. That's Barbara Streisand.
For two. Somebody really wants me to answer my phone. We're going to have to take it outside the studio. Here's what we're going
to
do.
We're just
going
to have to keep going.
We're just going to have to keep going.
Just going to have to keep powering through. It's okay.
Wow. It's more like a orchestral thing. Yeah, we all live. We got to do things.
Kip is freaking furious. The heck out right now.
I see him. He's banging on the glass.
Kip is running around.
To be fair, he didn't ask me if I put my... He usually asks us if we put our phones outside, and he didn't ask me today.
No, he just threw a chair.
It's just one of those things, yeah.
The crazy southern lady who keeps someone named Layla in a cell.
That's good.
The job, the slow-talking immigrant.
I am Job.
And then, of course...
Yeah. What a nightmare.
Nice. But, yeah. Yep, there were lots.
But yeah, the fact that we, of all of those, the hot dog is the one
that we doubled up on.
You too often like to double up on a hot dog. It's okay. Yeah. It's not a big deal.
I like it good.
Sometimes you just got to have two hot dogs.
It seemed like a timeout, but it's never.
Two hot dogs in a bun. That's all you need.
Two hot dogs in a bun.
Timeout. I could have called them wieners.
No. Wieners.
I got wieners.
No, you are getting too many movies mixed up. So.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go to the category Rob likes the best. I'll start this one off to give him time to stew over there. More like a thick soup. Best location in the film, category 5. I went with San Francisco itself. To me,
way to narrow it down,
I know,
David.
To me, San Francisco just looked pretty big in the 90s. Yeah. You have this movie?
You got The Rock.
The Rock, So I Married an Axe Murderer, Sister Act, Sister Act 2, Basic Instinct, and from the small screen, Full House. So San Francisco on fire. Looks cool. You got the Golden Gate Bridge, the Bay. It's always sunny. You got these nice looking houses.
She mentions Clint Eastwood because he's such a stud muffin.
Yeah.
That's right.
I like to imagine.
And Clint Eastwood, a lot of his movies, Sudden Impact Dirty Harry movies were in San Francisco.
But I like to imagine, Kurt, you're going to like this. I like to, because this is 93.
I like to imagine.
This is 93. So I think our friend from The Rock, our favorite trolley guy, he's given out tours. You don't see him on camera, but we see a couple trolleys. I think he's in there. You know, giving the tours, telling
people
about the city.
I bet you he likes Mediterranean looking women.
So, yeah, maybe. But this is, he doesn't know what's coming in 2 years. He doesn't know Goodspeed's going to destroy his livelihood at this point. He's just going on the trolley. He's having a great time. But I like to imagine him, you know, working there in San Francisco, having a good time.
Did you know one of the original spots the movie was supposed to take place, though, was Chicago?
Oh.
Because Chris Columbus just wanted out of New York, so he just wanted to go somewhere else.
I think San Francisco looks better.
It does.
I think so.
Chicago's a bit of a hole.
I wouldn't go there. To our Chicago listeners, thank you for tuning in. We love having you.
Yeah.
But you watch Ferris Bueller. Chicago looks great. What
I've
are you
seen
talking
National
about?
Lampoon's Vacation. That it was looked
in,
great.
That was in St. Louis. They were having their problems.
Oh, Chicago.
Oh, that's
there
true.
You go.
Yeah.
So we can just defend the St. Louis crowd. Let's stay away from the Chicago
crowd. All right,
crowd.
Sorry, Chicago.
Lock your doors.
Chicago's got a bigger...
Sorry, Chicago. Your football team's really good.
Chicago's got a bigger listening base anyway, so...
Now you're just... You're just
double down.
Patronizing.
Well, that takes
them.
Us to let's let Rob tee off on this.
No, what did you do? You go next.
Okay. No, I'm you want me leading to go? The show.
He's the guy with the little light up thing.
You.
Wow.
So that just means he forgot about me. It happens all the time. It's cool.
Mr. Botsy Pants.
That's right.
Hey, my location is a specific time and place in the movie.
Of course. Just spit it out.
So it's Miranda and Doubtfire in the kitchen.
Okay.
I just think that's a really pivotal scene. And really, that moment to me is was really good. I liked it. Right. I liked it because it was essentially
like where she goes, "Oh, you seem really familiar with the kitchen."
Who
labels their cabinets like that? That's terrible.
And then it's later when they're in the kitchen because she talks about a flawed husband is better than none at all. Mm-hmm. She talks about poor Winston being hit by a Guinness truck. It was the drink that killed him.
Literally the drink that killed him, dear.
But it really essentially was Daniel and her having a conversation for the first time, and she shared some things that Daniel didn't know, and he actually says, did you ever say anything to him, dear? And she Daniel never liked to talk about anything serious.
Yep.
She admits, but I was serious enough for everybody. And so that scene, I think, was really cathartic for both of them. And I really liked that scene. I liked that location.
We should not start with Rob because he always goes with the like less.
I was going to say, you did San Francisco. He went with all the thoughtful stuff.
I know.
And now you're going to come to me and I'm going with the pool.
Oh, nice. I like the pool too. It's got a basketball the pool. Hoop.
You know, he walks in looking like at it. That's called liposuction.
Liposuction, yes.
Or touch me again and I'll drown, Jack. Yeah. Or he's eyeing the girl at the bar.
The girl. Yeah. The thing
Did you know the bartender is his Robin brother. Williams' half-brother?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is a good fact.
Good facts. Yeah.
That's why we bring the hound in here.
And like in the credits, he's listed as like Dr. Toad or something like that because his name, they called him Toad growing up or something like that.
All right. Well, then that takes us to category 6.
Ooh.
Worst character. So I'm going to lead this one off too. I'm in charge here.
He's just like two in a row. Me first.
I'm going to go with.
It's me first.
I'm going to go with Miranda, Sally Field. I think she's the worst character in the movie. So she knows he's a good father, but makes the kids suffer multiple times because she's mad at him. There were multiple. She always admits he's a great father.
Typical man, always blaming the woman.
She sits there and lets the judge, like he said, pass these terrible things that, and she's making it worse on the kids by not letting them hang out.
Yeah.
It's bad for the divorce. It's bad for the kids. It affects them as they love spending time with him. She says things like, are my children ready yet? Like, I mean, and they haven't been divorced very long. She says that when she picks them up and she dropped them off for an hour late, picks them up an hour early because she needs to go to the market and the bank. It's a Saturday and it was at night. She's still got to go to the bank's not open. Stop with this nonsense. She could have done that the whole time the kids were at his house, store and bank. She had no reason not to do any of that stuff. She'd rather pay someone than let the kids go with him after school. Again, she admits he's a good father, but they can't spend the 3 hours with him. And then she makes fun of his apartment. But let's hold off for a second here. He's been living in this house for 14 years.
Yeah.
He just got kicked out of that house. Like, he just moved into this. His whole life got turned upside down.
Yeah.
Her life is pretty much the same, just not with him there. She's got the house. She's got the kids. She goes to her same job. Everything is the same for her. He literally had to uproot everything and start completely over in this apartment he hasn't been in his whole life. He's got to get a job that he hadn't have. And she doesn't cut him any slack whatsoever. She says, don't touch anything. Don't do this, do that. She goes, if you get a job in a decent apartment, I'm like, I have an apartment. I have a job already. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing the things he's supposed to do. And he just moved out. And so she just the whole time is just not doing a good job. I just think she's a bad character. I don't think she's particularly funny. I don't know if she's supposed to be the straight person. So I got it. She jumps over to Stu really quickly. Like there's really no,
fast.
There's no pause time in there between divorce and Sally Field, jumping back on the horse. Right. So, for me, Miranda, I think there's a little more leeway in there than she's given him credit for. Mm-hmm. So
how do you really feel about her?
Yeah, it's not good. So what do you got, Kurt?
I went with Mrs. Selner.
Oh yeah.
I think anybody
what did she do to you?
Anybody that can sit there that long in front of Robin Williams
and not laugh
in the office and not laugh at a single thing,
yeah. Do you find yourself is humorous?
A terrible human being.
I would find argue humorous?
I did once.
I would argue she's not just a worst character; she's the most useless character in the movie. She really, he doesn't. Even
I mean,
need to
I understand she has a
time.
Job, and so it sets up other things. But you could at least have some sort of personality. She just had none.
So, all right. Yeah, Mrs. Selner.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not doing good. She was also Jim Carrey's secretary in Liar, right. Liar.
Yes.
So she plays that cranky role pretty well. So,
does it well.
Yeah. All right, Rob, let's hear it.
Grab your pillows, kids.
Grab your pillows. Warm cup of cocoa. Cocoa.
He's a hippo popster.
I'm going to go with the next door neighbor, Gloria.
Okay.
Who there was a whole bunch.
If she wouldn't have snitched
first of
that
all, she had
power
a couple,
hungry hag.
She had a couple legitimate complaints. The animals were eating crap out of her yard.
No, I'm kidding.
You know.
No, oh, okay. Miranda Hillard.
Oh, nice.
I have a whole page.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
Right?
I tried haters. To be careful. You know, like maybe I did write
it's not a woman
one of my thing. One of my notes says the deleted scenes validate her. The birthday party was the final straw. So there's some. This divorce was coming.
I got that.
It was inevitable. But all the things you said. One thing that I want to point out: by her own admission, she never made an effort to communicate with Daniel about their problems. She
there
says
you
that.
Go. Mm-hmm.
Daniel offers early in the movie when she says, "I want a divorce." He says, "Let's go to counseling." She says, "No." She says, "Well, it'll be here when we get back." He says, "Let's move." Like he. You know, and then when he's over at Uncle Jack and Aunt
Uncle Frank and
Uncle
Aunt Frank, Jack.
Come on,
Frank and
whatever Jack. You got it, whatever. he says this will pass, this will blow over.
Yeah.
I know her, you know, and mm-hmm. so he sees this as we're gonna fix this. And do I think he's kind of an idiot and has made some bad choices? I do, but I don't think she gives him.
Well,
you know, and that quote you mentioned earlier, excuse me, dear, I'm sure you normally would encourage the children to step out of the room before you verbally bash their father.
Yes.
And Miranda says, well, if I did that, I might never see them again. And nobody laughs. And I'm like,
no.
Oh, so she's known to do this, yes. right? And this is, I just don't like her.
I want
to like her and I want to give her the benefit of the doubt, but
I don't think the divorce is valid. They should probably be divorced. But her behavior after the divorce, and you got to make the movie, so I got it, but when the first court says he can only see the kids once a week, she should have immediately been like, no, the kids love him. Right. He loves the kids. He's a great dad. Even after dressing up like Mrs. Doubtfire, I could argue, and she doesn't argue in court. I could argue her own words against her. She says after Mrs. Doubtfire came in their life, which is their dad,
mm-hmm.
he's passing all of his classes. The house mm-hmm. has never been cleaner. We eat dinner every night together. Mm-hmm. He made everyone's life better. Even if it was Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah. So the judge, and she should have said something to the judge that, no, this is, but her anger for her personal gain is taking over here. And again, she's not really thinking of the kids. And that's in divorces where kids are involved. That's probably your most important part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You took away my kids and didn't speak up to the judge. And she says, I was angry.
I was angry. Yeah. That's not a good, that's not good.
Not an excuse.
Be angry at me. So.
And he gets the one day a week. But then she eats into his time by dropping them
That's
off
what I
late.
Said. Late.
She picks
late,
them up
hour early.
Early. And then when she's getting them out to leave, you can hear her say, well, I tell you to use the bathroom, but that's probably not a good
idea. It tells them
and
not
then
to
she says,
anything.
Get your stuff because I don't want to come back here.
Can
I
come back here?
She's not cool.
It's not doing a good job.
I don't like her.
Sorry.
I don't like her.
Get rid of her. Nope. She's out. How come he doesn't get to keep the house? Why does she always get the house? Whenever they divorce, the dude's always got to move out. I'm out of here.
To be fair, in this one, she probably paid for it.
I agree. What if he had one like good role a long time ago we don't know about, and he's still getting like royalty checks off
maybe.
Of that? There could be a scenario. So, all right. Well, category 7, we'll start with Kurt on this one because you two whining that I went twice in a row. Worst scene or not needed scene. It was just unnecessary part of the movie.
I went with the first dinner at Daniel's house.
First dinner. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I just said that it made both of them look like complete assholes.
Yes.
With her dropping them off and everything.
Strong language today.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Watch your children. Asshole.
But, time out.
I don't know if that's the proper time.
But
that's okay. It pretty much, it just.
I'm trying to speak here, man.
God. You know, he controls the buttons. So when he's talking, no one else gets to button him.
I'm going to reach over and just start pushing things.
All right. So go ahead, Kurt.
Well, it just made them both look bad. Yeah. And there wasn't really a point to it. The only point I saw was it gave him an opportunity to change the numbers on the little card. He could have done that just dropping the kids off at the house.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was kind of an over-the-top way to make both of them look bad.
That's true. That is a good point, because in that scene, she's telling him that she's going to get a housekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he really pushes to see, I want to see the ad. I want to see the ad. What does he care?
Yeah, I know.
But on top of that, he needed to see it to.
But that's also where he says, let me take the kids. And she goes, well, I don't think so. No, I mean, there was an easy answer in there. So, but
Right. I thought it was too much with the dropping off late and him at the actual dinner table saying things about mom with the amoebic dysentery and stuff.
I agree.
So I just thought it was just too much just to make them both look bad. And it didn't really.
Yeah. It didn't do much.
Focus more. Anything.
It for lets the movie. You see that his apartment's bad. And at the end it's good.
Yeah.
I guess maybe just that transition. So, all right, Rob,
I'm going to go Mrs. Doubtfire as a television presenter at the end. Uh-huh. On a children's show, tells a Muppet character that they're going to go to England.
Yes, where she's from.
To which the Muppet asks if they speak Pakistani there.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Doubtfire then responds and says, no, only in the corner shops.
I know, yes. So that's the worst scene. not sensitive.
Not needed.
Not sensitive.
Not needed.
No.
No. No. That's one of those jokes he made in 93 that he would, if he was still with us, he would probably even say, he'll look back on.
I'll wait and see what you say. I have one other one that I question whether or not.
Well, I've got mine. You're both not going to like it.
Oh.
So, mine is when Mrs. Selner visits him at the apartment. I think this entire scene is absolutely useless. Aww. Now, listen. I like you don't so
Turn
the out. The iconic stop. The iconic hello comes from this. Yes, you get the hello.
Would you like one number two, dear?
I got that. But again, this is just giving him 5 to 10 minutes to do something. That's all it was, because it does nothing for the movie. Mrs. Selner is never seen again after this. You know, it's not like she shows up to provide information at a trial. She doesn't have anything else. She doesn't do one other thing in the movie after this. You hear an off-candid remark from Miranda that Mrs. Selner said that Daniel has a sister. But again, that didn't drive anything, because she didn't, there was no investigation into that, because as soon as Sally Field told Mrs. Selner, well, he doesn't have a sister, she would have been back at the apartment, writing things up.
Yeah,
you never see that again, all of that. But just that 5 to 10 minutes outside of her getting to say hello, improvised anyway, the scene itself doesn't do anything. It doesn't do anything for the story. It doesn't move anything, because Mrs. Selner is a useless character after that. She's not around. So even though that happens. So now my backup to that, also one you're not going to like, because it was your favorite and one of your favorite things, the pool scene to me is also technically for the storyline is kind of useless. Again, you get to throw the fruit at him and you get to make fun of him a little bit. But other than that, it doesn't actually progress any part of the story.
I thought it was just to show that Stu actually did like the kids.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a get in your pants situation.
But I think you could see that, like when they're over at the apartment the house, and he was sitting and talking to the kids, and you see how the kids react to him when he is actually around. So I don't think you need that to validate it, I guess that. But I'm just saying, that's 10 minutes you could have cut out of a 2-hour and 19-minute movie, and it's more like a 2-hour movie, and then you wouldn't have noticed anything. Like, the movie wouldn't have changed. The outcome is not different, is all I'm saying. But my number one scene is the Mrs. Selner, and everyone loves the whipped cream scene, so I got it. I'm just saying the whole structure of it was just unnecessary. Yeah. And that lady is really, really stupid that she's falling for him, running rooms, changing. It's like a Benny Hill skit, or like, what is that? Monty Python skit. He's running back and forth. Hold on, dear. Oh, we're here. All that is letting Robin Williams have 10 minutes to just screw around.
That's like, as the she picks up the coffee, picks up the cream, starts putting it on.
All right. So you threw a couple timeouts at me. So what's your argument of that scene?
Of the pool one?
No, of the apartment visit.
Oh, I agree with you, though. On the part that because that is true, that would not have been a sustainable ruse.
Mm-hmm. No,
because once they find out that he doesn't have a sister, they're going to do some investigating. They're going to find out he's screwed.
First of all, she's court appointed. She has all his information.
Right. She should have his family history.
She already knows about this.
Yeah.
The sister thing wouldn't have made any sense. Yeah. And why is she 30 years older than you? That's half sister on my whatever. It's just
I'm sorry.
And it's not even just that the sister thing wouldn't be a hold up ruse. just the scene itself doesn't produce anything other than the hello. And then what does he got to get a new mask? Because he drops it out the window. That was it.
Yeah.
So it just didn't drive the plot. It doesn't do anything for the plot other than give him 10 more minutes to go.
It let the little kids across the street see him putting on the fat suit.
It did.
All right.
We want to call it a fat suit. Let's just call it an old lady suit.
Okay. His beanbag suit.
All right. Well, you got any other?
I did have one about.
You said you had a backup.
Yeah. So on cracked.com, it says early on in the movie, we see Robin Williams trying out a number of different women disguises, including a babushka wearing Jewish grandmother who delivers the line, quote, "I should never buy gribbiness from a moil.
It's so chewy.
The line, of course, is completely irrelevant to the plot.
Yes.
It was just some random Yiddish that Williams's character was testing out for his Mrs. Doubtfire prototype. No different than, say, "I should never bagel yarmulke from a mazel tov."
But again, he's testing out dialogue for a woman he's already established a voice for. So
except that in the original line, Robin Williams is actually joking about putting fried penis skin in his mouth.
Yes, that is correct.
It unfortunately turns out that gribbiness are chicken or goose skin cracklins, and a moil is the guy who performs traditional Jewish circumcision.
I know that. I learned it on Seinfeld.
Put it all together, add the chewy part of Williams's dialogue, and you end up with the most horrific penis joke in a family comedy ever, hidden behind a firewall of Yiddish. You probably also end up with the horrible realization that you might never get an erection ever again.
Oh, wow.
I don't know where that came from.
Okay.
Thank you, crack.com.
Thank you. Crack. You just read it.
That's from smoking crack.
I read anything that's typed in front of me.
Hey, right, Ron Burgundy. Thank you very much.
I imagine when we release this episode, a family gets around, "Oh, I love Mrs. Doubtfire." And then penis erection just crackling, flying out.
Never get an erection again.
A moil. Like,
why are they talking about penises on Mrs. Doubtfire?
I'm sorry to the Humphreys girls.
Always. Apparently, they're the only ones we offend.
They listen on the way to school. So.
All right. Well, that takes us to category 8, least believable event. I've got.
There's only one.
The restaurant scene. It's very funny. I'll give it to it. But him going back and forth in the bathroom to change, almost impossible. Yeah. Somebody would have noticed that. He just wanders into the kitchen throwing pepper on things. Nobody cared. They
put the jacket on first.
They know who works there. I'm sure they would
know.
And
he's drunk, so he's stumbling through the place. A 70-year-old
woman works in the kitchen, so she knows that. just in general, the action of going back and forth. He could have gotten out of the dinner with Miranda and just been like, "Nope, I can't stay out that late. I got to rest," or these other things, or something like that. So, funny as it is, pretty unbelievable. Mr. Lundy's just sitting there, and then he's fine when he comes back. And, you know, the nonsense of having to force him in the limo and all the other things. So, funny as it is, little unbelievable.
Does your girlfriend have a girlfriend? Well, it's the 90s.
It's the 90s. Ooh, hot pee.
What? Oh, a hot pee.
Stay away from the hard pees.
We got the plosives.
Yes. Not like warm urine or anything.
I was like, no. Why are we? Stop. Hot pee. Warm urine?
Hot pee coming here. Hot pee, get your hot pee here.
All right, Rob. Least believable event.
Gosh.
You said there was only one answer. So what is it?
No, I was going to say, what legal issues would Mrs. Doubtfire face? That was my question. At the very least, he's committing some kind of fraud since he would have to provide basic personal info to his mother, or to the mother, including social security number, and then in order to get paid properly, unless she's paying him under the table, in which case opens another whole set of legal. Yes. She's making $300 a week. The gig lasts about 3 months, so we're looking at $3,600-ish, right? Does he give the money back? You talking about that?
He earned it.
Yeah, I earned
it. Does he have to give it back?
He was cooking lobsters at one point.
So there you go. So I just, the legality and the whole paying of the, like, nobody was tipped off that this is something.
He's doing tax fraud is what you're saying.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Rob's always worried about the taxes.
Like Miranda wouldn't have caught on. Like she's, I'm like, I don't think she's super smart.
She's pretty oblivious to everything.
Like she went along with it.
She did.
So then there, I think, again, does the judge go, okay, let's talk to you, Mrs. Hillard. Talk about
your responsibilities here.
You willingly entered into a contract with a stranger to take care of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Does she not get any?
No background checks, no references.
Yeah, you didn't do your due diligence, Mom.
I agree.
And so,
anyway. All right, let's be nice. We've established we hate Miranda, so that's all good.
She is the villain in this movie.
She is the villain. So,
and I feel bad for Stu.
All right. Can Kurt go now?
Yes, you can go.
Do you have one more thing?
No.
No, okay. Well, I do.
Wait a minute. Do you have one more thing? No. I have.
Put the notes away.
Four more bullets.
You got the
four more bullets.
All right.
I will refrain.
My least believable, originally I was going to go with the restaurant scene, but since you took it, I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to go with the kids run home on the first day Mrs. Doubtfire is going to be there just to watch the Dick Van Dyke Show.
I mean, that's a good show.
I mean, I don't know who's coming rushing home in 93 to watch old black and white reruns of Dick Van Dyke.
My assumption is that they watched it with their dad, and so it's some kind of, you know, memorable thing. That's my assumption.
Because
generally they wouldn't run
home. They just want to feel close to dad.
They'd be running home to watch like Double Dare or something like that, right? So,
but while he's telling them to get off, he didn't seem to have any affiliation to Earth.
But he's Mrs. Doubtfire. He can't show affiliation.
I get.
Well, he's trying to hide in plain sight. So,
because I still have yet to ever seen a Dick Van Dyke
show. You could have just agreed with me on the restaurant scene. We can be on the same side. It's all good.
Sometimes I like to just throw something extra.
All right. You are pretty extra.
You are extra.
So, yeah. All right. That takes us to category 9, our last category. I know that makes you sad, single tear.
I'm sure there'll be a bonus one. You always throw that out.
I don't have a bonus today. So, best song in the movie. And I'm going to let lots of choices. I will let Kurt lead this off. What do you got?
Oh my goodness. All right. I'm going to go with Barber of Seville Act 1, Largo al Facturum. The Figaro.
Wow.
He's singing at the Figaro. You got to have it.
That was interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't have picked that. I had a lot of choices I wrote down and that was not one of them.
That's probably why I just picked it, because I figured you had other ones.
You do. All right. What do you got, Rob?
I went with Papa's Got a Brand New Bag.
Ooh, good one. You and James Brown.
I did, yeah. That was his first song to reach the Billboard Hot 100 Top 10.
Oh, nice.
Peaked at number 8.
Really good.
Yeah.
Peaked at number 8.
Peaked at number 8.
Knew it up.
I went with Luck Be a Lady Tonight, Frank Sinatra. Ooh. I really like when they use that song in the scene that they were doing.
That's a good one.
I thought it was really good, so...
I always thought it was Must Be a Lady Tonight.
Nope.
Luck.
I didn't. I realized that when I looked it up.
That was my number two.
Is it about a woman of the night? I don't know.
We don't know.
Jump Around was also an option.
Dude Looks Like a Lady.
I wrote Matchmaker because it's a fun little song, right? Yep.
Okay.
Walk Like a Man. Little Frank Valli.
When I Googled it.
Oh, you.
You figured out the Google machine?
The Google machine.
The old Google machine. It says Motown Philly.
Was that
in the movie?
Not that I'm aware of. I didn't hear
it. On IMDb, it lists
maybe
Motown
it's on
Philly.
Soundtrack?
So maybe it's like in the credits?
I don't remember hearing it in the movie.
Yeah, I know.
Well, if you listeners out there know that we're wrong, let us know where it was in the movie. Yeah.
There was also a little Stormy Monday Blues in there.
Oh, man.
B.B. King and Albert Collins when they're cleaning the house.
You like B.B. King?
I do like a little blue.
That's right. He likes to be blue. Ba-dum-bum. All right, so that covers all of our categories. So final judgment, is this movie as good as you remember? Is it an all-time classic, or it's an okay movie that if you catch it once in a while, you'll rewatch it?
I would say all-time classic.
I think it's an all-time
classic. Nice, all-time classic.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I watch it still. Me and my boys are older, and we still watch it, and we laugh, and we like it. So I think it holds up.
Yeah.
A couple jokes we isolated that, but you could probably do that with any movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be just as funny. So, well, I think that covers everything you would ever need to know about Mrs. Doubtfire. By the way, Halloween and Christmas get all the attention and love when it comes to movies. But if you're looking to watch something for this forgotten holiday that is Thanksgiving, some 80s and 90s choices I've selected for you outside of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Let me get a notepad to write these down. You asked him.
You said, there's going to be some kind of a bonus. And he said, I don't have a bonus.
I said bonus category.
Well, it's not a bad category. Well, this is just me getting
I was talk. Trying to prepare for bonus this, categories too, okay. And now all my research.
This is my 5-minute Robin Williams time to cook, so just let me go
He's
off
got
on
some,
my own.
Grab
so.
Your pillows and blankies, children.
No, I keep the fans awake. All right, so.
Wow.
First choice, all about
Dave today.
Son-in-Law, starring Pauly Shore. Heartfelt movie about going back to the heartland for Thanksgiving from college.
It's great. Pilgrim Platter,
always a good one.
How do you feed a hungry man?
Steven Tyler PJs. All right. Grumpy Old Men, classic movie, great movie, takes place at Thanksgiving. Yes. Love that.
Okay.
Putz. And of course, the incomparable, the one and only Thanksgiving movie,
okay.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. All-timer with Steve Martin and John Candy. So yeah. I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's more. And as I was just going to say, those are my recommendations, and they're still not pillows. All right. So if you know, you know.
So,
you guys got any different Thanksgiving recommendations?
Ooh. Thanksgiving. Since I never got to speak at the beginning when you asked about Thanksgiving, Rob took all the time and I didn't say anything.
No,
I'm not a fan of Thanksgiving.
I know you're not. That's why. Also,
Thanksgiving is not good. I don't like it.
By the way,
also A, family, B, turkey. Neither one of those things are good. Yeah.
So, by the way, also why I kind of skipped him in the beginning, turkey pants? I already knew the answer.
David, favorite holiday, Thanksgiving?
I love Thanksgiving. I just like the food.
I'll grab a roll, some macaroni and cheese, and be like, all right, leave me alone.
Yeah. I like Thanksgiving. It's the food. I like watching football. I don't know. It's just a good day. And I always look forward to it at school and everything like that. So, I like Thanksgiving. That all being said, he will be at my house eating my macaroni and cheese with no questions asked, and he'll be watching... We'll be at home watching the Seahawks game while you're sitting comfortably in the cold.
In the freezing cold, probably rain.
Yeah, we're in the uncovered
section.
Good luck
with that.
Yeah. No, my kids still reference Uncle Kurt's turkey pants.
Oh, those are good.
Well, you got to have holiday eating pants.
Holiday eating pants. That's what you call
it. I got that from Joey, friends. Right.
All right. Well, you guys got anything else about Miss Doubtfire before we close this thing down?
There was a briefly discussed sequel that got panned.
Good idea. No, I don't need a sequel.
It was written by Bonnie Hunt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was watching.
You don't Robin know Williams. What you're
I don't know. Robin Williams was speaking about the sequel, and he goes, "If I'm going to be sitting in a chair for 4.5 hours a day, it's got to be really good." Which is really why it never.
Yeah.
That's why there's no sequel.
I will read this last little. It's not a little quote, but I think it. Well, no, I think it's worth saying. I look forward to it, Rob. The Hillards lived in a $4.3 million home in the middle of San Francisco, where she made enough money as an interior decorator as a voice actor to enjoy a very comfortable living. The entire movie is centered around their incompatibility, both his immaturity and her disinterest in their marriage. It's clear by both her immediately becoming interested in Stu and him ignoring his wife's restrictions on their son's birthday due to his grades. Neither one of the parents are good people or good for each other. She is arguably a worse mother than he is a father, and he's arguably a worse husband than she is a wife. But these are two horrible people with horrible ideas. You've embraced horrible personal moral narratives that led to the dysfunctional and emotionally challenged lives of their children. The sad tragedy is,
did you write this yourself?
No. Back of the box. It's a perfect distillation of everything wrong with the 90s culture, from him as a man child to her as an emotionless corporate rung climber.
And we're done.
And we're closing down on that.
That should have been on the back of the VHS
there you
box.
Go. We just said this is an all timer, and then
so it's a heartfelt, it's a good movie. Family movie.
Don't watch it. All right.
Did you know the original version they were supposed to get back together?
Yeah.
I saw that. Wouldn't have been good either.
No. And then they're like, no, we don't want to do that to children that do have to go through divorce.
Yeah.
Give them that false.
That gives them a bad impression.
I do think they were too. I don't think they were great people.
No, they're not. So. All right. Well,
as much as I dislike Miranda,
if you enjoy this podcast, which we hope you do, even despite some of Rob's downturns in language there, please take a second to give it 5 stars and drop us a review. We love reading reviews. So anytime you can do that, it would be great. Really helps out the show. Also, check out our website at totally80s90srecall.podbean.com. You can find links to all our social media sites, as well as subscribing to our Facebook group for weekly updates and future episode ideas. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at 80s90srecall@gmail.com. We love looking at recommendations, suggestions, and overall comments telling us how fantastic we are. And finally, we have a YouTube channel. Some of you have checked it out. Rob, why is our YouTube channel important?
I don't know.
That's you get to not see a good faces. Answer. You're not you doing
to,
a good job
because you get to
here.
See... our beautiful faces.
There it is. So you get to see our beautiful faces on top of hearing our beautiful voices. So links to all our social media. Way to plug the show, Rob. Links to all our social media, merchandise store, and email are included in the show notes.
I'm fearful that if people see our faces, they're not going to listen anymore.
I'm lovely.
They're going to go.
I don't know what you're fearful of. I'm lovely, so that's fine. I'm lovely, Dia. You're
lovely.
All right, so be sure to check them out after the episode.
Lovely.
All right. Okay. Any closing thoughts, Rob?
I think I've said enough.
I think so, too. That is
but just one more thing.
That is probably the best thing you've said for the whole show. Well, We better. Ah, yes. Well, we better get out of this studio before we suffer a drive-by fruiting or who knows what else. Hopefully you've enjoyed taking a look back at the 1993 classic Mrs. Doubtfire. We'd like to thank all our listeners. Say thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you,
gentlemen. You're so funny, aren't you? So matter of fact.
Dad joke.
Well, whether you're first-timers or subscribers.
Dad joke for the win.
We're glad you hung out with Rob, Kurt, and I. Hopefully we gave you scallywags an hour or so of some laughs and fun. And don't forget to tune in for all new episodes of Totally 80s and 90s Recall. When, guys?
Every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday. Yeah. He got that one right. Hey. There you go.
Tuesdays.
Tuesdays. Yeah. We'll be there every Tuesday. So.
What are we doing next time?
What are we doing next time? You're asking for your homework, Rob?
I want my homework you so I can go homework, get ready. So.
All right. Well, we're going back to the Billboard Hot 100.
Ooh, lots of content.
November 28, 1986. We're going back in time. New rule goofing, Rob.
New rule goofing.
You get to select from the top 50 songs out of the 100, and I get to select from the bottom 50. So I
feel like I'm being set up.
You've got the cream of the crop here, Rob. Best of the best. The top. But I'm confident with my musical acumen that I will come up with a better playlist than you will. So
don't use big words. Like acumen. Acumen?
It's not as big as you think it is.
Acumen.
So,
is that a seasoning?
Well, we thank...
I believe it's a seasoning. All
right. Well, we thank the Hound for being here. It's been a great time as usual. Yeah, I mean, you put your finger on the button. I assumed you were going to play it.
I am Hound.
Yes. You got anything else, Rob?
I got nothing.
Fancy goodbye?
No fancy goodbye.
Hello! Feels like the opposite for the end of the show.
That's great. Yeah,
that's great.
That's how we say goodbye.
And we have no closing music tonight.
No, it's not.
Oh, there
it's,
it is.
It's, man, it's be just, patient.
Just got to turn it up in my headphones.
Kind of turn it up in my headphones.
Help is on the way to you.
Arnold would have been great in that thing.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody loves a 6'5 old woman.
Busting out of her floral dress.
She wouldn't have been English. She would have been Russian.
Could also have played.